For Jens Hanokensen, 5 strokes. Jens moaned again. The guards holding him shook him. A shaved head and expulsion. For Corin Maharet, the Duke's brand on the forehead. 40 strokes, well marked, and expulsion to Nisi Turin. Corin writhed, trying to break free from his guards. Strip them, said Valichi. 2 of the guards by the platform came forward and ripped the recruit tunics from neck to hem, then turned the prisoners to face the formation. The guards forced Jens to his knees, and the one with a razor stepped up behind him. When he felt the first tug at his cinnamon-brown hair, he yelped and flinched.
Hold still, ye fool, said the guard. If ye jerk around, I'll cut ye.
Tufts of hair fell. Jens had shut his eyes and was rigidly still. The barber worked quickly and roughly. Soon nothing was left of the thick hair and mustache. A few shallow grazes oozed blood on his scalp, which was pale above his tanned face. The guards hauled him up the platform to the posts and crossbar and bound him to it, feet dangling. Then the guard with a whip mounted the platform behind him.
1,
said Captain Valichi. The whip smacked against his back. Pox saw his face twist in pain.
2,
another smack. He gave a strangled cry. 3, 4, the captain paused.
Sergeant Stammel, do you want the parting blow?
No, sir. Not for this one.
5.
The last blow fell. Jens's screams softened into sobs as the guards untied his arms and dragged him from the platform. Pox could see the welts standing out on his back. Only one was bleeding. The guards moved him away from the platform and held him facing the assembly. It took 4 of the guards to hold Corin, as one of them took the brand from the brazier, where it had been heating. Pox looked down. She didn't want to see this. She could hear Corin's muttered curses, the scuffling feet, the hiss and sizzle as the brand etched his forehead. He gave a short cry, followed by gasping sobs. She glanced up for a moment. The guard with a razor was taking off his hair. Corin's face was white under its tan. The brand showed stark, a stylized fox head. Without his hair and beard, his face looked different. He hardly had a chin. His eyes met hers. He snarled a curse at her, and the guards cuffed him. Pox stared over his head. She didn't want him to think she could not watch. The guards dragged him up the platform, still struggling to break free, and bound his wrists to the crossbar after removing his chains. Then they bound his ankles to bolts Pox had not noticed, and the guard with a razor stepped up to him. Corin paled even more.
What are you—
Tanisi Turin means shaved all over, said the guard, grinning. Like a shorn lamb, remember?
And shortly the hair on chest, belly, and groin made a heap on the platform. When that guard was through, he stepped back, and the one carrying the whip came forward. By the 10th stroke, Pox no longer cared what Corin thought. She stared straight at the mess hall windows. No one had reminded her that she might have been on that platform, but she remembered well enough what Stammel had said when he first came to her cell. She loathed Corin, would be glad to see him gone, but she could not watch. The blows went on and on, each counted out by the captain's calm voice. They sounded different now. Corin sounded different, too. She tried not to hear that and lost the count. Suddenly it was very quiet. She looked up. Corin hung from his bonds, head drooping. She could see the blood streaking his legs and staining the platform below.
Well, Sergeant Stammel?
Asked the captain.
Yes, sir. With pleasure.
Stammel left his place and mounted the platform. The guard handed him the whip, now glistening along its length. Pox watched, fascinated and horrified, as he braced himself and gave Corin 5 powerful blows. Corin's body jerked, and he gave a last scream and fainted. Stammel ran his hand down Corin's back and returned to his unit, holding his bloody hand out. He faced Pox and touched it to her forehead as her eyes widened in shock.
By this blood, your injury is avenged, he said, and took up his position again.
Meanwhile, one of the guards had taken a pot of blue dye and was daubing it on Corin's back. Then he was untied and lowered to the ground. His back and legs were covered with welts and blood. The blue stain looked ghastly, mixed with blood. A guard checked his pulse.
"He'll do," he reported. "Cold water, sir?"
The captain nodded. After several minutes, and a bucket of water, Corin stirred and groaned. When his eyes opened, Captain Velici nodded, and the guards pulled him to his feet and bound his hands in front of him. Jens, meanwhile, had been dressed in a night shift, with a rope noose around his neck. His guards looked to the captain.
"Go ahead. Take him out."
"West, sir?" The captain nodded in answer, and the guards led Jens away. Corin now had a rope around his neck, too, and at the captain's second nod, his guards tugged, forcing him forward. He could barely keep his feet. Pox looked away, stomach churning. She heard horses' hooves behind the formation, near the gate. Muttered voices. Then the hoofbeats moved away, through the gate, and the courtyard was left in silence. Captain Velici looked at them for a long moment.
"Some of you," he said, with a grim smile, "seem impressed by what you saw. I hope you all are. The Duke will not tolerate anything that jeopardizes the strength of the company. In a few months, you will be depending on each other in battle. Each of you must be worthy of your companion's trust, both on and off the field. If you aren't, we'll get rid of you. If you injure a companion, you'll be punished. It may be that some of you don't have the stomach for army life. If so, speak to your sergeant. We don't want cowards. Sergeant Stammel, assign a detail from your unit to clean up this mess, and I'll want to speak with Paxenarian. The formation is dismissed."
In the unit's duty room a few minutes later, Pax tried to act calm.
"Sit down, Paxenarian," said Captain Velici.
She sat across the desk from him. Her stomach was a solid knot of apprehension.
"Have you talked to any of your friends since this happened?"
"No, sir."
"Good. Paxenarian, you have a good record so far. This is the first trouble you've been in, and from the evidence, none of it was your fault. Stammel did say that he thought you should confine your use of strong language to terms you knew the meaning of. Though calling someone a jack's hole full of soured witch's milk..."
Pax gasped and felt herself reddening. The captain smiled and went on.
"Is not an excuse for an attack. It can cause trouble. Did you even know that was Parganese? No? Well, stick to common or whatever your native language is. Anyway, you're blameless of the brawl itself. Now, you've been injured in the company, though not, we think, permanently. If you wish to leave, you may. We will give you a recommendation based on your record, and a pass through the Duke's domain, and a small sum to tide you over until you reach home or find other employment. I can suggest several private guard companies that might hire you with our recommendation. You'll be on light duty until you can see out of that eye again. You may have that long to make your decision, unless you are already determined to leave. Are you?"
"No, sir. I don't want to leave at all."
Pox had had a lingering fear that she might be thrown out.
"You're sure?" Pox nodded. "Well, if you change your mind before you're back to full duty, let me know. I'm glad you want to stay in. I think you'll do well, if you stay out of fights like this. Tell me, do you think Corin was sufficiently punished?"
"Yes, sir."
Pox could hear the distaste in her own voice.
"Ah, it bothered you, eh? I see it did. Well, it's supposed to, and if you stay in, you'll see that again, though we all hope not to. Now, about Corporal Steffi. I have agreed with Sedgwick to let him go south for his trial by the Duke. We've kept the scribes busy, and have the witnesses' testimony and the rest written down. We think this will be sufficient. And the Duke won't need to see any of you, we hope. Anyway, Steffi has been quite concerned about you. Did Stammel mention it?"
Pox nodded. Stammel had told her a lot about Steffi.
"He's asked how you were, and he wanted to see you and apologize. He's a good man, really. We're sure that some outside influence, probably magical, affected him that night, but
It's up to you. Will you see him before he goes south?
Sir, I don't know. Should I?
The captain frowned slightly, lacing his hands together.
It would be kind, I think. He can't hurt you now, you know, even if he wanted to. It won't make any difference to his trial, but it would reassure him to see you up. You don't have to, of course.
Pax did not want to see Steffi ever again. But as she thought about it, she realized that she would have to, next year in the South. They might be in the same cohort. He might be her corporal. Best get it over, she decided, and looked up to meet the captain's gaze.
I'll see him, sir. But I don't know what to say.
Valichi smiled.
You needn't say much. It'll be short. Wait here.
He rose from behind the desk and went out, shutting the door. Pax felt her stomach churn. She swallowed once, then again. It seemed a long time before the door opened again. Pax rose as the two captains, Valichi and Sejic, and Steffi, came in together, crowding the little room. The mouse under Steffi's eye had faded to a sickly green.
I'm very sorry, Pax and Arian, for the trouble I caused you, said Steffi.
Pax could not find her voice and merely nodded.
I want you to know that I don't do things like that, not usually. I never have before.
His voice shook a little.
I hope you won't leave the company because of it.
I won't, said Pax. I'm staying in.
Good. I'm glad. I hope you're feeling better.
Yes. Suddenly Pax found herself wanting to reassure this man, even though he had hurt her. She liked his honest face.
I'm doing well. In a week I'll be fine.
He relaxed a bit, and seemed to have nothing more to say. Captain Sejic opened the door, and Steffi went out. Pax saw the guard waiting for him in the passage.
Thank you, Pax and Arian, for seeing him, said Sejic a moment later.
I, too, regret your injuries and the trouble you've had. Steffi will be punished, of course.
But, sir, everyone's told me it wasn't really his fault, said Pax.
Before she remembered that Sejic was a captain, she bit her lip. Sejic frowned and sighed.
Maybe it wasn't, but even so, he injured you. That doesn't change. We punish drunks for their misdeeds and for being drunk. He'll be punished.
Pax thought of Corrin's punishment and shuddered.
But he's not as bad as Corrin, she persisted.
No, he's not. But he's supposed to be better, much better, than any recruit. He's a corporal of the regular company, a veteran. This is not an offense to regard lightly.
But that's not your concern. Don't worry about it. I, too, am glad to hear that you're staying in the company. I'll see you in the South next spring.
Sejic went out, leaving Pax with Valichi.
Valichi's mustache twitched.
Now that's as close to an apology as I've ever heard Sejic come.
Apology?
Well, he's wishing he'd taken a better look at you before he banned you that night. But Sejic doesn't like to admit he could be wrong. I'll warn you of that. Don't even hint that he made a mistake on this, or he'll be down on you for years. Right now, well, he's convinced that you're acceptable. It helped that you defended Steffi. Was that why you did it?
Pax was confused.
Sir,
No, you're not the type. Go find Stammel. He's out drilling, I think, on the east grounds, and he'll keep you busy.
Pax walked out, still confused, but happy to be returning to her friends. She joined in marching drill, but Saiger barred her from weapons practice.
You can't fight with both eyes open yet, he said. It'll be a long time before you're ready to fight with just one.
Barracks chores were well within her capacity. When she thought about the cell, or the infirmary, she was glad enough to have them to do. At first, no one said anything about the fight, or its aftermath. Sabin explained that he had tried to find Stammel, that by the time he had returned, she was already hurt. The others simply avoided the subject. Even Effa forbore to give a lecture on the protection of Gerd. This suited Pax very well. She had no desire to talk about the little she could remember. But in the other units, curiosity overcame tact, and as soon as she was back in weapons drill, the questions began. Baranyi, the tall black-haired woman in Vasek's unit,
often marched against Pox in drill, went farther than most. She was well known for her strength of arm and sharp tongue.
"You should have poked an eye out," she began one afternoon, as they walked back to the main stronghold with a load of firewood.
Pox shook her head.
"I was trying to get away." "That's stupid. Anyone can get mauled trying to get away. Attack on your own. If you'd gotten an eye..."
"I'd have been in worse trouble, Bara." Pox checked the mule she was leading, and shoved one length of wood back into place. But Bara had not gone on. She halted her own mule and went on with her lecture.
"No, you wouldn't. He started it. He was wrong. They'd have had to admit that. As it is, they owe you."
"No, they don't. Besides, they only found out it was his fault because I was beat up worse."
"That's not right."
Bara scowled and strode along silent for some distance.
"If it's not your fault, they should..."
"Bara?" Notslin, a slender, pleasant girl with warm brown eyes, who had been coupled with Bara before they joined, laid a hand on her arm.
"Pox came out well, and if she's satisfied..."
"No, she came out beaten half dead, and..."
Pox laughed.
"By the gods, Bara, I'm not that easy to kill."
"You looked it that morning. A real mess, I tell you. I was ashamed."
Pox felt a flicker of anger.
"You?
And why you? I was the one out there in front of everyone." "You'd always been a strong one, Siger's pet, and there you were looking like something that had come from a lockup."
Pox grinned in spite of herself.
"Well, I had."
"Blast it. You know what I mean. You looked..."
"Gods above, Bara. She doesn't want to think about that now."
Vic shoved his way between them and winked at Pox.
"Don't worry. Even bruises and chains can't make you ugly, Pox."
She felt herself go red.
"Vic,
like a song,"
he went on unmoved.
"Did you ever hear Falk's Oath of Gold, Pox, when Falk was taken in the City of Fear and locked away all those years?"
"No. I thought Falk was a sort of saint, like Gerd."
"Saints," snorted Bara from Vic's other side.
"He is," said Vic seriously. "And Bara, I wouldn't scoff at them. Maybe they're far above us, but they have power."
"The gods have power," said Bara. "I'm not like Effa. I don't believe that men become gods when they die. I'd rather be alive anyway."
"But tell me about Falk," said Pox. "Isn't he the one that wears rubies and silver?"
"I don't know what he wears now," began Vic. "He was a knight, a ruler's son, who kept his sworn oath and saved his kin by it, even though it meant years of slavery for him."
"Ugh, why didn't he just kill his enemies?" asked Bara. "I heard that he spent a year cleaning the jacks of some city."
"That and more," said Vic. "It's in the song, but you know I can't sing it. My father did, and I know most of the story. You'd like it, Pox. It's full of magic and kings and things like that."
"A magic sword?"
"Oh, yes. More than one. Someday, when we've made enough money, we can hire a harper to sing it for us."
Vic kept the conversation going until they reached the stronghold, where they broke up into their separate units. Bara shook her head, but stayed away from the topic the next time they drilled together. But others wanted to know what the underground cells were like, and what Stammel had said, and what the corporal had said. Pox fended off these questions as best she could. The cells were cold and miserable, and she wouldn't repeat any of the talks she'd had. Eventually, they let her alone. Meanwhile, Stammel had taken the unit in to help Kolya with her apple harvest. This was their first time to see Duke's East, since they had arrived from the west. Children playing in the streets waved and yelled at them. The adults smiled and spoke to Stammel. They passed an inn, the Red Fox, and a cobbled square surrounded with taller stone houses, and came to a stone bridge over the little river. Upstream, Pox could see a weir and a mill pond, and a water wheel slowly turning. Kolya's land lay south of the river, beyond a water meadow where cattle grazed. Kolya's orchard had more trees than Pox could count. She had never seen such a thing. Her aunt had been famed for 5 apple trees and 2 plums, but Kolya had rows of apples, plums, and pears. Only the apples remained so late, scenting the air with their rich, exciting fragrance. Soon Pox was high on a ladder, picking the apples at the top of her assigned tree. It was cool and sunny. Perfect weather for the job. Below, in the aisles between the trees, Stammel and Kolya strolled together, directing the pickers and talking. Pox caught a few snatches of that conversation, between orders to the workers. It seemed to be far removed from apple harvest. Something about someone named Tamarian, who had once been in the company.
"Wouldn't have happened like that at all," she heard Stammel say. "She would have made sure first, before she called for a ban."
Kolya snorted. "In her day, you'd never have brought back someone like Corin at all, would you?"
"No, you're right about that, but things are different."
Pox saw his head shake, far below. Then he peered up to see that she was working. She wondered if the mysterious Tamarian had been a sergeant, even a captain, but something in their tone kept her from asking. As fall turned to winter, the recruits honed their weapons skills, now learning to use a shield with their swords. They began drilling in groups, one line against another, learning to work together with their weapons. They were allowed to stand guard, first with the regulars, then alone. On guard duty on the wall, with her sword hanging heavy at her side, Pox felt very much the professional. One gray, sleety day, she was on duty when a traveler came up the road from Duke's West and called the challenge herself. She thought he did not notice that her tunic was recruit brown instead of maroon. Along with all this, they were introduced to tactics. Pox had thought that after mastering the intricacies of drill, nothing remained to learn about engaging the enemy. She was wrong.
"But I thought we just ran at them and started fighting," said Vic, echoing her thought.
"No, that's the way to get killed, and quickly. None of you will make these decisions now, but you all need to know something of tactics. You can do your job better if you know what you're trying to accomplish."
They were gathered around Stammel in the mess hall between meals. He began to set out apples on the table.
"Now suppose this, here, is the Duke's company, and this over here is the enemy. Look at the length of lines."
"Theirs is longer," said Sabin, stating the obvious, "but we..."
"Listen. Now suppose we engage just as we are. What happens on each end of our line, on the flanks?"
"They can hit the side too," said Vic.
"If they have enough, they can go all around," Pox put in.
"Yes. That looks bad, doesn't it? But it depends on why their line is so long, and what they're fighting with."
He added more apples to the array.
"Suppose they've only as many men as we have, so their line is long and thin. We form the square, and we engage one-on-one all the way around. With our depth, we actually have them outnumbered at each position. If they're fighting with swords, they won't have a chance. We have concentrated our strength on their weakness, or rather, they have stupidly chosen to make themselves weak all over."
Effa frowned at the table. "So, it's better to make the square?"
"Not always. We can't move fast or far in the square, you remember."
They nodded.
"Mobility is important, too. So is terrain. Where is the good ground?"
Quickly, he showed them how slope, water, and such hazards as swamp and loose rock could change the choice of tactics.
"It's the commander's responsibility to choose the best ground, for our side, of course. The Duke's famous for it. But you need to know how it's done, so you'll know what to watch out for, and which way to move."
"But we're under orders, aren't we? We just do what we're told."
"Yes, but sergeants and corporals get killed. Even captains. In battle, there's no time to send questions to the Duke. If the regulars don't know what to do and why, the cohort will fall apart. Be captured at best. That's what Kolya Minas Tirith did. Took over her cohort. Kept them moving together the right way. That's why she made corporal so young. If she hadn't lost an arm at Cortez Kilwan, she'd have been the youngest sergeant in the company, I don't doubt. But when she went down, someone else took over. That's what we train for."
They looked at each other, wondering. Pox hoped she would do as well, without losing an arm. The only thing that frightened her was the thought of ending her career as a young cripple, with nothing left to do. Soon the lessons in tactics had gone beyond table demonstrations to live practice fields. Each recruit unit made a mock cohort, and they practiced engagements, disengagements, squaring, flanking, and other maneuvers, first without weapons, and then with wooden swords and shields. In smaller groups, they learned to fight in confined areas, stairs, passages, stables.
They made ladders and scaled the walls of the stronghold in mock assaults, then learned to hold the wall against assaults. And since the Duke sometimes hired mounts when he wanted to move his troops rapidly, they learned to ride. "This is a mule," said Corporal Bosque. Pox thought that was unnecessary. The mule flicked one long ear. On the ground beside it were saddle, saddle cloth, and bridle. "A mule is not a horse," he went on. That was also obvious. Long ears, mealy muzzle, heavy head, small hooves. Pox suppressed a yawn. Maybe some of the city people didn't know the difference. She glanced around for Vic. "How many of you," Bosque was asking, "have ever worked with mules?" Several hands went up. "You," he said, pointing. "What's the big difference between mules and horses?"
"Mules can kick anyways," said Geordi, "and they're fussier about their ears, and they're smarter than horses."
Geordi's father, Pox remembered, had something to do with caravans.
"Right," said Bosque, "all of that. Those of you that have never worked either will have less trouble than you horse folk. They are different. Mules are more ear-shy than any horse, and if you drag a bridle over their ears, they'll plant a hoof on you, a back hoof, when you're standing in front of them."
Pox looked at the mule, surprised. It didn't look like it could kick forward.
"And they're smart," Bosque went on. "Really smart. A good one'll go farther on worse ground with less fuss, but a mule looks out for itself, above all."
He picked up the bridle and showed them how to put it on. The mule assigned to Pox flicked its ears nervously as she eased the crown piece over the top of its head. She talked to it as if it were her father's plow pony, but kept a respectful eye on the near hind leg. The mule that kicked Sif had made a believer out of her. She laid the saddle cloth on its back, and after another look at Bosque's demonstration, set the saddle in place.
"That's right," he said, as he walked along the line.
"Now fasten the girth." For that, she had to bend down, reaching under its belly. The mule stood, as if its feet were bolted to the ground. Pox caught the end of the girth and drew it up. The mule swelled visibly. Pox tugged the girth tight and pulled again. The mule gave her an inscrutable look out of one amber eye and shifted its weight minutely. Pox glanced back and saw the tip of the near hind hoof resting lightly on the ground. Its ears flopped out sideways, swung lazily back and forth. She tugged again at the girth. The mule sighed, without losing an inch of its circumference, and the ears were still. Pox glared at it.
"Dumb mule," she said.
"That won't do," said Bosque behind her. "Mule knows you're nervous, like this." He grabbed the mule's reins, gave a short jerk, and yelled "Hi!" into one drooping ear. The mule threw up its head with a snort, ears forward. Bosque thumped it hard in the ribs and jerked the girth 4 inches tighter with one smooth motion. "Like that," he said. The mule was back on all four legs, tail swinging gently. "Don't hurt 'em," he went on. "They won't forget being beaten, say, but you've got to get their attention and be firm. Can't bluff 'em, like you can horses." Eventually, they all learned to bridle and saddle the mules, and after hours of painful practice, they all learned to ride without damaging the mules or themselves. Pox even grew to enjoy it, trying to see herself on a prancing warhorse instead of a mule. She asked Bosque once if it were the same. His face creased in a grin.
"Thinking of that, are you? And you not yet a soldier. Well, Pox, it's about as much like riding one of these old pack mules as playing soldier with a stick sword is like real warfare. You've a long way to go, girl, if that's where you're going."
Pox blushed and kept her dreams to herself after that. As that cold winter wore on, they began to feel that they were ready to go, ready to face any army anywhere. Some from each unit had left, those frightened or shocked by Corrin's punishment, those injured too badly to continue, and a few more who decided, as the training came closer and closer to actual combat, that they didn't want to be soldiers after all. Some of the recruits, Pox and Bara among them, were surprised that these dropouts were let go with so little dispute. Why had they had to sign an agreement to stay 2 years if anyone could leave at any time?
"Think about it," said Stammel when Pox asked. "Your life will depend on the skill and courage of those beside you. Look at Tallis. She was warned along with the rest of you, and she got pregnant anyway. Anyone too selfish or stupid to take birthbane
when it's right there on the table at meals, isn't going to make a good soldier. As for courage, do you want to chance your life on someone whose only thought is getting away?
No, but...
No. And they did not know until they tried the training that they would fail or be so frightened. Neither do you. That's why no one's promoted from recruit until after we've seen them in battle.
Pox thought about that and looked at her companions with new intent. Vic, always joking, but quick as a ferret with his blade.
Arnie, pleasant and hard-working, never flustered.
Sabin, good-natured and strong, quick on his feet.
Effa, bossy and nosy, but totally honest and fearless.
Bara, her nearest rival among the women for size and strength. And Notslin, her gentler shadow. Quiet Sim, Jorty with his caravan tails, quick-tempered Selly, chill Harbin. Those swords would ward her. Or not. Her sword would ward them. Or not. But time to think was short, with a rush of training, and soon the year turned toward spring. The first brief thaw made mush out of the snow on the drill fields. The ground below was still frozen. And then, the hints began.